Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here today once again with my good friend and brother, and your good friend and brother, Anthony Bongiorno.
Hey, everyone. Hi,
Anthony. Pardon my French, but how the fuck are you?
I'm feeling so excited for this episode.
Me fucking too.
This is gonna be a fun one.
This episode is sickest burns.
We need a guitar. We need a sting. Yeah.
Sickest burns in pop culture. That means insults, sticking it to someone.
Reads. Mine are mostly reads.
Yes. Sick burns. We both have five.
Well, I had a hard time getting it down to five. I have seven. So I'm going to play it by ear. Two of these are going to be honorable mentions.
This was my idea, and I had a hard time getting to five.
Oh, I have so many.
But I really love my list.
The flavor profile, if you will, of ours, I'm sure is going to be very different.
Sure.
But I think that there's one that we're both going to have.
Sure, maybe.
And I'm excited to see if you have it too.
Would you like to go first, or would you like I to go first?
I guess I will go first.
Sure.
And I'm going to start with the one that I think is my most mainstream.
Sure.
And the one that I suspect you might have too.
Sure.
So I have them all like word for word.
I'm going to recite
them.
Okay,
this
good.
Evening.
Good, good, good.
This is from Billy Madison.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have it?
Yes.
Okay, I knew you would have this one. So this is the game show host.
Yes. After
at the academic decathlon,
played I think by Jim Downey.
Yes, he. So what? I don't even remember. Billy Madison gives some stupid answer about
what is the question is. They're doing the decathlon.
Academic decathlon, yeah.
And it's like Jeopardy. And it's the funny like person who's hosting it. Like he keeps talking about his his wife who's cheating on him.
This category is my whore of a wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. There will be no cheating, especially not with my wife, who is a filthy, filthy whore.
Yeah. And so the question is, how did the Industrial Revolution affect literature?
Yeah.
And Billy Madison starts just talking about this book that
the little engine that could, right?
No, it's like the boy, he lost the dog.
Oh, yeah.
And it's because he sees his kindergarten teacher in the audience.
Yeah.
So he's talking about these, like, and the dog.
Yeah.
It's like the boy is literature and the dog was a revolution.
And then after it's like a very lengthy answer. And then after he says, like, the whole audience erupts into applause and they clap, whatever. And it's like supposed to be a big win.
Yeah.
And then the game show host says, "What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul." Now, that is so funny. The way he delivers it is amazing.
It's the straight way he delivers it.
And also the fact that it's become such a great meme.
Yeah.
After, like, watching somebody say something stupid.
Yeah. When I was in grad school, I remember we had a class that ended with presentations, and we would send that to each other. Like, this is what the professor is going to say to me. Nowhere near.
I think my favorite part is, "I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul."
It just is the way he plays it so deadpan is perfect. And having the correct reaction to the bullshit he said is what's is funny. And just how. It's sobering, but he's also like almost upset that it happened. Like, he's mad at him for having such a bad answer.
Yeah. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
That was the most insanely idiotic thing I've ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Just that line. You were nowhere close to anything. Like, we just had a rational thought.
It's amazing.
A simple wrong would have sufficed.
There's so many also, like, great, like, that's always, that comes up as, like, a teacher meme a lot.
Oh,
where
yeah,
it's, like, when a student talks, like, gives an answer that's, like, so bad.
Yeah. I guess I'll give one.
Okay.
Now I'm down one.
I'm sorry.
This one comes from 2007. Mm-hmm. It's from a commercial called The Affair. Mm-hmm. It's delivered by an actress named Jessie Merriweather. Mm-hmm. A wife comes into her husband's office. She realizes that he's had an affair with his secretary. The joke is that they're not cursing, but saying all these sort of proxy words. The wife calls her a cootie queen. And she says, "Who are you calling a cootie queen, you lint licker?" And America changed.
And that, it was a cultural reset.
That was an Orbitz gum commercial.
That's a great commercial.
Who are you calling a cootie queen, you lint licker? This is my Roman Empire. I think about the term lint licker.
Wow.
At least once a day.
Wow, wow, wow. I didn't realize it had such a profound impact on
it. Don't you remember, like, at the time?
Yeah, oh,
like,
everybody was saying it.
Yeah. It's just the way she plays it, too. Like, who are you calling a cootie queen? You lint licker. It's like, it feels like she's saying the C word.
Yeah.
With saying lint liquor.
And the, yeah, it's her performance is really what makes it.
Yeah. God bless her.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
So yours, are yours shorter? Mine are so long. Mine are really are reads.
Yeah, mine is.
Like long reads.
I only have one other that's long. Most of them are short.
Okay. I'm going to give you my next one.
Sure.
Again, they're all, I apologize for the length. They're all.
No, that's fine.
They're reads. This, I'm gonna save that one for honorable mention, I think. So this is a great one. This is one of my favorites. It's from The West Wing.
Okay.
So it's very Sorkin-esque. So Sorkin is, everyone who's familiar with Sorkin knows that he's a very dialogue-heavy writer.
Mm, yeah.
So there's monologues are his thing.
And yeah.
He's really great at them. This is from an early episode. You may have seen this. This is like, this clip has been making the rounds a lot over the last few years, like isolated. But yeah. In context, it is, he's giving like a campaign speech or some, I don't remember exactly where in the series it is, but he has a group of people there and he's talking, the president, played by Martin Sheen. And there's a woman sitting there who is the host of like a Christian conservative talk show.
Yeah.
And he keeps like, he's trying to like stay on message, but he keeps looking at her and he's like, he seems like thrown off by her presence.
Mm-hmm.
So then he like stops his like regular talking points and he says to her like, "I know you, I know your show." And she's like, "Yeah, thank you, whatever." And he's like, I like your show. And then like, he's being sarcastic. He's like, "I like when you say gay people are going to hell. That's one of my favorite things you say." And then she says, "I don't say that, Mr. President. The Bible says that." And she's sitting down.
Yeah.
And he's standing up. Everybody else is standing up. And then he says, "Yes, Leviticus." And she says, "Whatever the verse is." And so mine starts with, he says, "Chapter and verse." Like, he's impressed that she knows the whole thing. Then he goes on this kind of rant. That's great. He says, "I wanted to ask you a couple questions while I have you here. I'm interested in selling my youngest daughter into slavery, as sanctioned into Exodus 21:7. She's a Georgetown sophomore, speaks fluent Italian, always cleared the table when it was her turn. What would be a good price for her? While thinking about that, can I ask another? My chief of staff, Leo McGarry, insists on working on the Sabbath. Exodus 35:2 clearly says he should be put to death. Am I morally obligated to kill myself, or is it okay to call the police? Here's one that's really important because we've got a lot of sports fans in this town. Touching the skin of a dead pig makes one unclean, Leviticus 11:7. If they promise to wear gloves, can the Washington Redskins still play football? Can Notre Dame? Can West Point? Does the whole town really have to be together to stone my brother John for planting different crops side by side? Can I burn my mother in a small family gathering for wearing garments made from two different threads? Think about that, will you? Oh, and one last thing. You may have mistaken this for your meeting of the ignorant tight asses club, but in this building, when the president stands, nobody sits." And then she sits, she stands up.
Yeah, I have seen that many times.
It's great.
You wish the world were really like that.
I know.
Right? Imagine people a president have called, actually, yeah.
People have called the West Wing like a liberal wet dream.
Right, because Democrats are such fucking wimps. They'll be like, I disagree with you. And like, they just back away from the fucking most heinous shit.
Yeah. Democratic bedwetters, they're called.
Yeah. It just, yeah. I always say, like, it was so inspiring when Michelle Obama said, "When they go low, we go high." And I...
In hindsight, it's like, maybe we should go lower.
Right. In hindsight, it's a beautiful sentiment. But in hindsight, you could not imagine how low they're going to go.
Right.
And you have to fight them on some level. You can't just be like, they're crazy, right? It's like, no. Like, I mean, they are, but they're in a cult. So,
right.
You wish there was a president smart enough to make that very simple point, which is the Bible's full of ancient nonsense.
Right.
So to take one piece out and act like it makes sense amongst all the other nonsense would be stupid. But no president, liberal or conservative, would ever say that about the Bible.
Right, right. And it's just such a great scene. I love that it ends with him making her stand up.
Yeah.
I love that she's, you know, it's that TV thing of like when somebody's read to filth, like they don't say anything back. They just kind of like are silent.
Right, which doesn't happen.
Which doesn't usually happen in real life, but it's such a great scene. He has a lot of great, like,
he was good.
He's good. Sorkin lines. Yeah, he's good. And Sorkin does a lot of great reads like that.
Well, the pilot of The Newsroom
has the thing about America used to be great. Yeah,
right. She's like, do you think America is still great or whatever? And he talks about like, how is America ever great? I don't know what you're talking about.
He's like, we're 50th in education. He's like, but we're number one in adults believing angels are real.
Right, right. Yeah. And the series never reached that height again.
No.
That it's like the first scene of the pilot, and then everything from that is a down. Like the show, I think the show was okay, but the show would never got that good again. And that's the most famous thing from the pilot.
Yeah. Well, have you ever watched West Wing?
No, not really.
So West Wing is great. It's a product of its time in that it's kind of disjointed. Like it's not like something that'd be on cable now. That's like very kind of like cohesive from beginning to end, because it was a network show and they were writing it week to week or whatever. But originally, the president was not a main character. He was just supposed to breeze in from time to time and be a recurring. And the pilot is, it's about his communication staff.
Uh-huh.
It's about the staff of the West Wing. And the pilot ends with him. You don't see him through the whole thing. And then the very last scene, the president comes in and he like reads someone else to filth. And then it was so positively received that then they made him a main character.
Uh-huh.
He was not supposed to be.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But he has so many good scenes like that. He's so good, Martin Sheen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's good. Like his performance is really good for the Sorkin-esque kind of dialogue.
And it's interesting. I think things like that find great life on like TikTok and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, because like, it's like you could cut out that scene and just watch it in isolation and it's, you
know. I was a fan of Boston Legal. And a lot of that comes, you'll see on TikTok. And like, I'll even look some, like the Boston Legal episode where he goes to the Supreme Court and he like just fucking insults all of them and the whole idea of the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And
aren't they like proxy Supreme Court members?
No, they're actors playing them, but they're real. Yeah. He says their own names and stuff. And he's like, who are you people?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's those things find an interesting life online.
Yeah.
All right, I'll go. This is a somewhat long one. This is from a film called Harriet the Spy.
Oh, God. How did I forget about this?
1996.
Iconic read.
We did an episode on Harriet the Spy.
We did. God, this is good. I'm glad you brought this one up.
So Marion is the girl picking on Harriet.
Marion Hawthorne.
And they're in the bathroom.
This is acting. This is like the acting studio.
Hello, Marion. Get away from me, Harriet, or what? Well, she delivers it with a stone cold, like tenor of a serial killer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's just washing her hands.
Yeah.
Or what? You're gonna tell your father? I heard my parents talking. You don't have a father. All those stories about horseback riding are garbage. You made them up. Your father lives in Amsterdam. He hasn't seen you in 3 years. And you want to know why, Marion? Because he doesn't love you.
It's so good.
It's so fucked up. It's wild.
He doesn't love you.
He doesn't love you.
God, that's such a good one. That's iconic.
It is incredible.
It is. She delivers it so well.
It's steely.
It's, and the way that she's, you're right, she's like washing her hands and like while she does it and drying them.
The other girls are stunned in silence.
There's another great burn from that is the only thing worse than being Marion Hawthorne is wanting to be Marion Hawthorne.
Yeah.
God, what a great movie.
Yeah,
that's a great burn.
It really is. It's not just you're a liar and I've caught you lying, but let's jump to the logical conclusion, which is that your father doesn't love you. You are unloved, which is truly the subtext of all insults, right?
Yeah.
You are unloved.
You're unloved and unlovable.
Yeah. And she says it as a child. In a bathroom. The only thing that could have been worse if she went and just spit in her face. just looks right in her face. But almost she doesn't need that.
Yeah, no, she doesn't.
It's already just a jab to the fucking emotional solar plexus.
Yeah, God, that's a good one. My mind didn't go here, so this is not on my list, but I just thought of it when you were reading that. It's super recent, but from the Ted TV show.
Oh, yeah.
When he like reads to Filth the popular girl.
Yeah, because she's being mean to because the she's kid's being mean mom.
To the kid's mom, who's the substitute teacher. Yeah. God, that is a good one.
And also, we all know that you got a nose job.
Yeah, we all know you got a nose job. And he just like goes on and on. He's like, yeah, so he makes fun of her eating disorder. Yeah, it's like really brutal. Real it's brutal, yeah.
Yeah.
He reduces her to tears.
Yeah, it's so good.
And just the fact that the main thing that's so funny about it and Ted in general is just that like he's such a cute teddy bear.
Yeah, the Ted show was a real surprise hit.
Yeah, it was really good.
In my life.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good one. God, that was good. All right. So my next one is from Designing Women.
For the people who might not know what that is, can you explain it?
Designing Women is about a group of interior designers in Atlanta, Georgia, run by Julia Sugarbaker, played by Dixie Carter. Who is like on the show is like a very outspoken liberal icon. Interestingly, in real life, she was a Republican. Did you know that? Yeah.
No.
And so every time she had a long liberal monologue, she made them give her an opportunity to sing as a negotiation because she liked to sing. So she was like, you know, if I have to say this stuff, like give me a song. She was a good sport about it, but she didn't like always believe everything she said. Interestingly, but this is from the AIDS episode.
Okay.
Which for network television, especially at the time, like was pretty progressive.
Sure.
And she's like fighting with this woman, Imogene, who's talking about like gays deserve it for their lifestyle or whatever. And then so Julia Sugarbaker gets in her face and screams, "Imogene, get serious. Who do you think you're talking to? I've known you for 27 years, and all I can say is if God was giving out sexually transmitted diseases to people as a punishment for sinning, then you would be at the free clinic all the time." And it's a great read. It's the Southern accent. It's all of it. It's so good.
Being insulted in a Southern accent is always, it's always better. There's music to it.
It's the best. She has a lot of good ones. I was tempted to do the other one with the night the lights went out in Georgia. Have you ever seen that one?
No.
So her on the show, Delta Burke plays her sister, who's a former Miss Georgia beauty queen.
Okay.
And she goes to like a beauty queen reunion or whatever. Wow. And some of them are like making fun of her behind her back for like gaining weight.
Okay.
And then so Julia like corners this woman who had been teasing her, and she was like, "I'm Julia. I think it's Susan's sister. And let me tell you about her. She was the like," she just goes on this rant where she was like, "She had a flaming baton and she twirled it into the air. And then she had a 16 and a half minute standing ovation, and the lights went out when she threw it into the air, and people referred to that night. And so you should know, and your children will know, and your grandchildren will know that was the night the lights went out in Georgia." It's just like a great, and she's like getting physically closer to her as she's yelling at her. It's great.
I haven't seen this show in years. Oh
God, it's good.
Have you watched it again?
I've recently started watching, not straight through, but I've watched like clips and episodes.
Yeah.
It was like badass for its time.
Yeah.
Wow. They have the one gay coded character, Anthony, who is straight, but he's so queer coded on the show.
Right.
But it was pretty progressive in its politics, made more interesting by the fact that they were in Georgia.
Yeah.
So it's like there were a lot of outside characters who were very like conservative that she would spar with.
Interesting.
And it's just, yeah, it's a great show.
You used to see, there was a time, especially like on TV, we saw a lot of Southern characters.
Yeah.
You know,
they had a real moment in like the 90s, it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even going back to something like Green Acres
Belly
Hillbillies, like there was a, yeah, it's interesting.
But that,
I guess they're underserved now, really.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. If you think about like just quick burns, you could find probably a million from Golden Girls.
Oh, God.
From like
yeah.
Dorothy to fucking Rose.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yes. Or like,
or Sophia
to Dorothy.
Sophia to fucking Blanche.
To Blanche. Just calling her a whore, basically.
Just constantly like, you're a filthy whore.
Yeah. God, the Golden Girls are.
It's just that's,
I didn't even think of
that's
going what there.
That's half of the comedy. It's just like them fucking insulting each other.
Yeah.
You're the dumb one. You're the slut one.
So good. Who was the comedian during a roast who said like, "I wouldn't fuck you with B. Arthur's dick"? I don't remember. And she was there.
Yeah, yeah. She reacted perfectly, too.
She did react perfectly to it.
Yeah. I don't remember.
A little transphobic, but it was funny in the moment.
Yeah.
Jean Smart and Annie Potts. What a cast Designing Women was.
Yeah. So this is, let's see. They only have two left. Although I do have one that was, I can make an honorable mention that I was toying with. I didn't know if I wanted to put it on, but I'll say it. This is from the 2013 film Monsters University. The bad guy, Johnny Worthington, who's the head of the Roar fraternity, he calls Mike and Sully's fraternity the most adorable monsters on campus and then drops multicolored bright paint on them, then glitter, then stuffed animals. In this film, in the world of this film, you must understand that this is an economy. This is a monster world. And it's an economy that runs on screaming, children screaming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there had not. This is a prequel, so the revolution of Mike Wazowski realizing that, in fact, laughter is a better energy source has not happened. So everything is based on: are you scary or not? So to call somebody adorable in this world is the worst thing you can say.
It's the sickest burn.
It's the sickest burn to say you guys are adorable.
Yeah,
you guys are cute. And they're trying. They're in school to learn to be monsters, to be scarers.
Yeah,
and
it's a good one.
It's deep.
It's like when you mom and dad's dog. When you say like people think you're cute, stop trying to be tough.
Yeah,
because you like will be ferocious with a little bow tie on.
It cuts through them.
it cuts you right to the core.
Yeah, it's like don't you get that you're cute? Don't you get that? No, look around. No one is intimidated by you. I say that to Peach sometimes. I'm like, nobody's intimidated by you. Who do you think is intimidated by you? If I ever act scared, I'm playing with you. I'm fucking placating you.
Right? Okay. My next one is from The Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Okay.
This is an iconic read in the Housewives fandom and lore. Yeah. Again, it's ladies from Atlanta.
Sure.
Being great. I'm not going to do an accent because I don't want it to like slip into something offensive.
Sure. So
this is Phaedra Parks at the reunion of one of the seasons reading Kenya Moore. Mm-hmm. And this is such a good read because they like famously like hated each other. But it's truly one of those ones where like Kenya was in real life stunned into silence. Like Kenya had no retort. She just kind of sat there and took it because she didn't know what to say back. And it is just a warning. It's awful what she says to her. Because part of like Kenya's thing is like she had a lot of anxiety about like being an older, not older, but like she was like in her, I guess, late 30s, early 40s, and she still hadn't had a kid yet. So she was in the season was thinking about what's it called? Artificial insemination.
Oh, okay.
And part of like the beef between them was like Kenya had like flirted with Phaedra's husband or whatever. So she says this to her. They're on the couch. The best is that they're sitting on a couch in full ball gowns.
Sure, like,
it's just all of it is great. She says she's sitting around running around talking about my husband, the father of my children, and she spends her weekends peddling through sperm banks, looking through catalogs. That's how she says it, trying to find a donor. Honey, you don't know if your baby daddy will be an axe murderer or a child molester, because what you will know is that he needed $10 for a medium sized pizza, so he ejaculated in a cup so you could have a kid. Now check that.
Wow.
You can Google this and you will find a million people who like know this by heart and will say it like in tandem with the clip. It is so brutal.
Let me ask you, are they written for them though?
No.
They don't have writers?
No. I don't believe that they do.
Okay.
That, especially like that is off the cuff in a reunion, like in the middle of an argument.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if they do, they're brilliant.
Uh-huh.
But they, I mean, the Real Housewives of Atlanta are known to be like the funniest of all of them.
Yeah.
Because they're just so quick and they just like cut each other down so well. You think
it's because part of that culture is politeness? So there's.
Yes. That's the thing about Southern burns is like, it's like that bless your heart thing.
Right, right. Even I'm like sounding nice. Yeah. Like still magnolia.
Yeah. But then like, if you really push me, I will fucking wreck you.
Right.
Yeah. It's so. Again, it's an awful thing to say to another woman.
Yeah, it's very terrible.
But it is, she delivers it so, like, you can hear a pin drop when she's done.
That's incredible.
So it's a classic moment. And then kind of just sitting there like fanning herself. It's so, the whole thing is so great.
What breaks the silence after that? What happens?
I think it's just like Andy being like, okay, let's move on.
It's fucked up.
Yeah, it's really fucked up. It's quite a burn.
And it's so much like professional wrestling now that I think about it. Like, oh, yeah. Who, like, in that dynamic, who, like, do people normally root for or against?
The thing with the Housewives is they're all awful.
Sure.
So it depends on the season. Sure. Truly. Because in every season, there's, like, the good guys and the villains, yeah. And they change from season to season. In that season, I feel like the audience, I think, in that moment, like, kind of felt like Kenya was getting her comeuppance. Yeah. But then, like, the next season, Phaedra was the villain. So it just shifts all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. It's like if wrestlers, like, constantly shifted between being cads and, or heels and, yeah. and heroes.
And sometimes they do.
Yeah,
If a heel, I mean, The Rock was a heel. Yeah. But when you get popular enough, they make you good.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
people, and so many people are rooting for you.
Right. The Housewives are so insane and so like iconic at this point. But I think it's the reunions is where you get the best stuff. Because yeah. again, it's them sitting on couches in full like regalia.
Sure.
Just going at each other verbally. Yeah. It's terrific.
I'll give you an honorable mention.
Okay.
So this is, I wasn't going to include it because it feels dated, but this is from way back in during the Iraq War. It's from the David Letterman show. Bill O'Reilly was a guest on Letterman. Okay. And the whole thing's interesting. From the second Bill O'Reilly gets out there, Letterman starts going into him. And he's okay. like, so what are you doing over there in Fox News? Like he just starts immediately going at him. And then Bill O'Reilly's like trying to go back. He kind of knows that the audience is against him.
Right.
It's
crazy he would even agree to go on David Letterman.
Yeah. At one point, Bill O'Reilly says, Letterman starts talking about how the war in Iraq has been a waste.
Right.
And Bill O'Reilly goes, this is such a weird question. He says, do you want us to succeed in Iraq?
Yeah.
And then Letterman starts to answer. He's like, well, and he's like, no. Do you want us to succeed? And he's like, again, he's like, tries to talk. And he's right. like, no, it's a simple answer. Yes or no. Do you want us to succeed? And then Letterman goes, it's not a simple answer for me because I'm thoughtful. And everyone fucking yeah. cheers because it was such a perfect line. It was perfectly delivered. It's the perfect sentiment. It's not simple for me because I'm thoughtful.
Yeah.
Like that's the best. When somebody tries to make you answer a yes or no question, that's the best response to say, no, I can't answer that because I'm thoughtful.
Yeah. That's kind of like, I like that one a lot. That's gotta be old. That's from the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's from the Bush administration. Sounds yeah. like. I have one other political one that's an honorable mention that just, I guess, reminded me, I guess it connects to yours. Mine is when at Obama's last State of the Union, he said, I have no more elections to run. And then the Republicans started clapping. And then he said, I know because I won both of them. And then the Democrats went crazy. Yeah. It was just such a good burn. He was so good at being quick like that.
Yeah.
And he had another one like that where somebody said something about like, why didn't you call it a terrorist attack? I think it might have been Benghazi.
Yeah.
And he was like, because I like to know what I'm talking about before I comment on a situation.
Yeah.
And he was like really quick.
Well, he had an incredible line when he was debating
Hillary? Is it enough, Hillary? Because that was a good one too.
No, it was Mitt Romney. Oh,
about the I don't have to check my 401k as often. I don't have as much as you do, like that.
Obama was so great. No, Mitt Romney says something stupid about like our Navy is diminished. We don't have any.
Oh.
We don't have as many like battleships. And he goes, yeah, we also have less horses and bayonets.
Yeah, it's a great one.
Which is just like mwah, gorgeous. Less horses and bayonets.
Yeah.
Such a brilliant. It really shows the art of debate, right? Because like it's about being right, but in a good way.
And also it's also about being quick.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, those are good. Okay, so I have honorable mentions.
Sure.
And then I just have one left. So my honorable mention, well, the one that we talked about in often when we pitch these ideas, we have like an example.
Yeah.
And the one that you pitched, which is also on my list as honorable mentions, is You're a Virgin Who Can't Drive from Clueless, which is such a great burn. And the delivery, I mean, Brittany Murphy is just so good. You're a virgin who can't drive.
Yes.
I have from the original Mean Girls. I liked the new Mean Girls, but it's not, I do think that it is not as mean. as the original Mean Girls. Like, I rewatched the original recently, and I was like, oh, wow, there's a lot of, like, really mean lines that are not in the new one. And one of them is from that when they're all apologizing to each other, and the one girl says, I don't hate you because you're fat. You're fat because I hate you. Such a great line. And then there's another one that's like, I'm sorry I called you a gap-tooth bitch. It's not your fault you're so gap-tooth. and then my last honorable mention is from Trixie Mattel.
Yes.
From this is like, again, it's just great because it was so quick and on the spot. She and Katya were doing like a live show. And a lot of the fun thing about Trixie and Katya is like, they have these drag shows, but a lot of it's just them sitting down talking to each other and like in conversation. And some girl like yelled out in the crowd. And then Trixie goes, oh, that's fun. It's a girl yelling at a drag show. Stop the press. And then she goes, any other rich content you want to contribute, baby doll? It's really funny.
Well, the world of handling hecklers.
Oh, so
is,
good.
Is,
you're either really good at it or you're not. And if you're really good at it, you're golden.
Right. Or like, it also depends on, if you're bombing, the crowd could be behind the heckler.
Right.
But if you're doing good and they're on your side, you can make everybody hate the person to the point where they leave miserable sometimes.
That's great when you see them get up and leave and they're like screaming on their way out.
Yeah.
And then they're like, where are you going?
Yeah. Or like sometimes they immediately regret it. They say something and they're like, no, I'm not going to. I want to know what you meant by that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have one left. You want to do yours?
Tell me.
Oh, okay.
No, I'll do mine.
Just yeah.
You already said it. Clueless.
Oh, that's your number one.
Yeah. So the context is Cher
Horowitz. Cher Horowitz, yeah.
Who we love.
Our Emma Woodhouse, because this is inspired by the novel Emma.
She's beginning, I believe, at this point to realize she has feelings for Josh.
She's just realized she has feelings for Josh in the scene prior, yeah.
Yes. And Brittany Murphy is like...
Oh, wait. No, it's a scene after. Sorry.
Yeah. I think it's part of what helps her get there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And Brittany Murphy's like... Oh, but what she did just do is
she just flailed her driving test.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And Brittany Murphy, like, she kind of like created her. And she's like a monster she created.
Yeah.
And she's like, I want to... this weird gesture of like, I want to burn these mementos for this guy that she didn't really
from
ever
Elton,
like.
Yeah.
Then she says like, I like Josh. And then she's like, what do you think? He's too, I'm too stupid for him or whatever.
Yeah. And she's like, I don't know you and Josh. Like, you know, you don't really,
she's not,
you don't,
she doesn't deserve it.
She's like, I don't know if you mesh well together.
Yeah. She doesn't.
Cher is in a moment of vulnerability
yeah.
because she just failed the driver's test and she's trying to be a good friend.
Yeah.
And she doesn't deserve it, which makes it that much worse.
Yeah. And her reaction is great because she just like, it's like, oh, that's way harsh.
Yeah, that was way harsh, Ty. She's like, I don't even know why I'm listening to you anyways. You're a virgin who can't drive.
And you got to think back to when you were young. You know, if in high school, those are the two things. You don't have sex and you don't drive. Yeah. These are the two things that make you an adult, that make you a grown person. It's so painful.
Yeah.
I remember I lost my virginity, like 2 weeks ago. And I remember being like a few times like called out of like being in a fight with somebody and someone called me a virgin. And there's no like way to, there's nothing you can do. You just
by choice. Okay.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work. Maybe females can do that, but as a guy, I couldn't. I remember a few times just being like, oh, damn.
You're right.
Somehow I've lost
God
the whole
it,
fight.
You're right.
We had nothing to do with my virginity, but somehow you've won this whole fight because you've pointed out that
it's also
I am
like,
a virgin.
It's such a, like, really, virginity is, like, not a real thing.
Right.
It's
concept.
A construct. Yeah,
yeah,
it's a
it's
concept.
It's ridiculous, and it's based on a puritanical idea.
Yeah. But I think people forget what a big deal it is. Like, what a big deal, what a rite of passage it is to get your driver's license.
Yes.
I think it's something like adults don't carry
because it becomes
them.
Some bullshit thing that you have to do every day.
Right.
You forget about how like nervous you were the first time you drove and how much of an achievement it felt like.
And that's the thing that's, I mean, I think Clueless is one of those like perfectly written movies. And I think what makes that moment land so well is that that moment is built up to through the entire thing. She's learning how to drive.
Yeah.
And it's in the beginning, she gets in trouble for driving without a license. and gets a ticket. He has that great line where he's like, I didn't know you could even get a ticket without a license. And she goes, oh, sure, daddy, you can get a ticket anytime.
Yeah.
And she asks Josh to go driving with her. So like she wants to get her license.
Right.
And then the fact that she finally gets to the test and fails miserably. And then right afterward is told, like, you're a virgin who can't drive. It's just really good.
Although she does, her virginity is something she chose.
Yeah, she's saving it for the right guy, she says.
Christian Slater.
Well,
or whoever.
Someone like that. Yeah, she said, her thing is she doesn't want to date high school boys.
But no, what's the joke that
she's saving herself for, it's not Christian Slater, Luke Perry.
Luke Perry.
She's saving herself for Luke Perry.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that gives Ty, because Ty is like her little creation, but then Ty has a leg up on her because Ty's not a virgin.
Right. And she's like,
she leverages that to like slam her.
Yes. Yes. It's brilliant.
You know what I love about Clueless?
You know what's a good burn is the fucking, the driver guy. He's like, girly, this is for sure. I'm the messiah of the DMV.
Yeah, it's so good.
Isn't there someone else I could talk to?
She does that great. That, you know, it's Mean Girls is, like I said, like the new Mean Girls feels defanged in a little bit, which is a little disappointing. But what I do love about Clueless is that for a movie that's that is about like popular girls, like it's a very kind movie.
It really captures.
They're not mean.
Right. Right. And it's not a thing where you're there to laugh at Cher.
Cher. No.
You like Cher. Despite her ignorance, because she's earnest and nice.
Yeah, and then she learns and changes and evolves.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's Stacey Dash.
Stacey Dash does give she gives a good performance in that movie.
She's really good.
Yeah.
You can't get enough of that movie. I've seen it so many times, and it's always fucking good.
I saw
it a few times at the Alamo, and like people will say, you're a virgin who can't.
Yeah.
Like it's Rocky Horror. Yeah. Everyone says it because it's just like, ooh, the sting.
It's such a, it's got a magic about it, that movie.
Rest in peace, Brittany Murphy. Yeah. She was great.
R.I.P. And R.I.P. Stacey Dash.
Yes, she was great.
She was
wherever
great.
Wherever she is right now.
Wherever she is, great. I hope she's all right. So my final one is interesting coming from me.
Sure.
So this was inspired by the fact that our girlies from New York City are on Netflix now. Yeah. And there's a whole new discourse about Sex and the City because a bunch of Gen Zers are watching it on Netflix.
Yes.
It's like a thing. Like they're all watching it.
Yeah.
And so like it's all over TikTok or whatever. And I'm a famous Carrie Bradshaw apologist.
Yes, you are.
Even though people really hate her, especially now in hindsight. But my number one is an amazing read that someone gives to Carrie where they read her to filth. So this is Carrie feels that she must have lunch with Natasha.
Yes.
Who is Big's ex-wife, who she had an affair with Big while he was married to her.
One of her many horrible decisions
that she's made.
That's really selfish. But she thinks it's selfless.
Yes. And then she says, she has a great line. She's like, we're so over. Well, because, so anyway, they're having an affair. At one point, he goes to work. She comes home, catches Carrie in the apartment. Carrie runs away.
Yeah.
And then as she's chasing her, she falls down, breaks her tooth. Carrie takes her to the emergency room. And then Carrie walks away when Big shows up and says, like, we're so over. We need a new word for over. Which you wish it would end there, but she went back to him eventually anyway. But so then she's haunted by like, she says at one point, like, I hate that there's someone running around the city who hates me so much. So she like wants to clear the air with Natasha, which is incredibly selfish.
Right.
That she needs to get this off her chest, even though she's the one who did something bad.
Right.
So she like shows up at Natasha's lunch uninvited and sits down. And says, like, I just need to tell you, like, I'm sorry. I know you're avoiding me, but, like, I'm sorry. So Natasha says, and it's delivered wonderfully by Bridget Moynihan. She says, I'm sorry, too. And the best one is Carrie is like, you are?
Yeah.
And, like, thinks that this is going to be a bonding moment. Yeah. And she goes, yes, I'm sorry about it all. I'm sorry that he moved to Paris and fell in love with me. I'm sorry we ever got married. I'm sorry he cheated on me with you. And I'm sorry that I pretended to ignore it for as long as I did. I'm sorry I found you in my apartment, fell down the stairs, and broke my tooth. I'm very sorry that after much painful dental surgery, this tooth is still a different color than this tooth. Finally, I'm very sorry that you felt the need to come down here. Now you have not only ruined my marriage, you've ruined my lunch.
So
and then
great.
Dismisses her. It is such a good burn. It's exactly what Carrie deserved.
Yeah.
And I think the show, like, in that moment, at least, like, I think you were meant to feel like, oh, Carrie deserved that.
Yeah.
And I think Carrie in that moment realizes like, oh, I've been a selfish bitch.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't about me. Like, I hurt this person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she just leaves.
Yeah.
It's a great scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot here. What do you think about Gen Z? The fact that they're watching it, but also like, kind of like don't like Carrie.
So it's interesting because it seems like they like the show.
Yeah.
But they're like critiquing it through a 2024 lens, yeah, while liking it and watching yeah, it and liking it. And it's, what's interesting is it's in hindsight, Gen Z seems to be propping up Charlotte a lot. Charlotte and Samantha.
Yeah.
Because even though Charlotte is like the most like, not conservative politically, but like conservative as in like she knows what she wants. She wants a family, yeah, yeah, and kids or whatever. Charlotte is the only one who like during that time of like the 90s, like I don't see color, I don't see class. Yeah. Like Charlotte has so many scenes where she's just like, you guys are pretending like we don't live in a class. We don't have classes in this society, yeah, and we do.
Yeah.
And like I've seen so many clips where like Gen Zers are like, Charlotte ate. Like she was the only one who like spoke truth to these other idiots.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And they all are like Carrie's a mess and Carrie's whatever.
Right.
Although she's still like, I think there's still like people recognize that like, oh, she's a style icon.
Yeah.
They're like, she is a hot mess and she's a horrible person. Which is interesting.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. Because she was, I still love her. I think feel like the old guard is like, Carrie's the best. Like, everybody wants to be Carrie. But now it's like, who wants to be Carrie?
Right. She's a ridiculous person.
Yeah. I love, though, that there's new discourse about the show.
Yeah.
And I think that this scene, you know, I know And Just Like That has people who hate it. I think there's a really good bookend to this scene in the first season of Just Like That when Big leaves her $1 million.
Yeah.
And then she like goes back to like being crazy and stalking her.
Yeah.
And then they run into each other in Starbucks.
Yeah.
And they have like, it's the first time they've talked to each other in like 20 years.
Yeah.
And they finally like kind of make amends.
You remind me of, there was a moment in the last season, or maybe it was the first season, I don't remember, that people liked where it was fucking,
was Steve yelling at Miranda.
Steve yelling at Miranda.
Yeah.
Saying like,
the audience like stood up and cheered.
Yeah.
You don't care about anyone but yourself. You didn't even want Brady. You like,
yeah, yeah.
Brings all the baggage comes out.
Yeah.
It's really good. She deserved that.
She did deserve it. She did deserve it. You wonder if maybe like you, I mean, we've done full episodes,
yeah,
on,
yeah, yeah,
Just Like That, and how odd it is. I mean, really, you can have various different opinions on it, but I think it's an oddity. There's something, it doesn't fit.
And yeah, I, it feels weird.
And I wonder if it's because maybe it was the wrong time. Maybe they should have done it quicker or waited later.
Yeah.
Something. It's just something about it. It's just like it doesn't
also fit. The absence of Samantha feels weird.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And the fact that there's something heartbreaking about it would almost be better if she was just like killed off or something. There's something heartbreaking about that they really, in the world of the show, they don't talk to Samantha anymore.
Yeah.
Even though they've made up, she's still distant.
Yeah.
When the original show was so much about the four of them being great friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, I think that's a great great burn.
It is. It very much is. Yeah. But in the original, you're not supposed to read it. Like in the original airing, right? You're supposed to read it as like, oh, I feel bad for Carrie.
I don't think so.
You think so?
I think that I actually think if you watch it in context, like you're supposed to read that as like Carrie has been up her own ass throughout, yeah, this whole thing. And like, again, in that situation, Charlotte is the only one who like holds Carrie accountable and is like, you're the other woman. Like right, that's her husband. And the other two are like, you can't judge her. She's our friend. We need to support her. And Charlotte's like, how could you do that to another woman?
Yeah. It's like when in Gilmore Girls, when Rory was dating Dean, when Dean was dating another,
yeah,
girl.
Yeah.
And fucking Lorelai was like, you're wrong. You're the,
yeah,
bad one. And
yeah,
she's like, but he's my Dean. He's like, what do you mean you're Dean? He's,
yeah,
her Dean. He's, yeah, married to her.
Yeah. Yes. So I think that moment is supposed to be like, the audience is supposed to be like, oh, I don't think the audience is supposed to turn on Natasha and think she's the villain. I think the audience is supposed to be like, oh, Natasha like has been wronged.
Yeah.
By this situation and by Carrie.
Trying to think if there are any other sick burns.
God, there are so many that, I mean, I had something from Aaron Brockovich.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's the great scene where she, like, is talking with the lawyers.
Yes.
Like, when the big firm takes over the case.
Yeah.
And then she's like, yes, that. And then there's another one where, like, the lawyers who are representing PG&E come in.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is more money than these people have ever dreamed of. And then, like, right before that, Ed Masri was like, don't say a word. And then she's like, well, now that pisses me off. And she goes on this whole rant. She's like, how much is your spine worth, Miss Sanchez? How much is this whatever? And then she's by the way, we brought that water in from Hinckley.
Yeah.
That's a great scene.
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
That is a great movie. That might be one of her best performances.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think that movie, I think the real Aaron Brockovich is probably a great person, but I think that movie is actually, like, will outlast the real Aaron Brockovich. Probably.
Now she's just like an advocate.
She's an advocate for like water. She's like doing a lot in Flint.
Yeah.
Like she's just like, she's an environmental advocate, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure there are a million.
My mind is
racing. Gonna think of so many like later.
I know.
That we forgot.
I mean,
I can't even believe I forgot Harriet the Spy. That was such a good one.
I'm thinking about like all of the insults and All in the Family.
Oh my God.
I mean, calling a meathead.
I mean, his burns are funny, but it's always great when he gets his.
Yeah, like the moment where Edith tells him to stifle.
Stifle. Oh, God. So good.
Stifle.
Stifle.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been PCMC. This was the sickest burn. Sickest burns. We need like a fire alarm sound. Anthony, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.